Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome to Sports Day on this Monday night. Mark Reddings and Adam Papalia, a huge show coming up shortly. We'll check in with West Coast Eagles rookie Brady Hoff after his 14 disposal game against Essendon on Friday night. We'll be heading across to the UK where Craig Gabriel is in position, our Nine Radio tennis correspondent ahead of Wimbledon, which begins as we speak tonight. There's a bit of rain around in the UK, but we'll check in on some of those Australians in action as well. East Perth coach Jeremy Barnard will have a chat about their big win on the weekend. John Saxon, the CEO of NRLWA after the State of Origin last night, 59,000 supporters at the venue. And Nico Hearn, pro golfer and now author, will talk to us about what he sees as the most important elements of golf and how he's become such a big name in Australia over so many years and a decorated career. But first of all, Adam, good evening to you.
Good evening to you, Skeet. Yeah, really looking forward to having a chat to Nico Hearn to try and get a few tips on how I can improve my score, because I'm a terrible golfer. Can hit the odd good one, but a lot of terrible ones in between. So, yeah, looking forward to picking the brains of Nick, who's obviously so good. It's been a massive weekend in sport, Skeet. It was all the way back on Friday that the West Coast Eagles took on Essendon and they broke the drought and got their second win of the season, their first in 10 weeks. I wonder how West Coast Eagles fans are feeling on this Monday, given it's a little bit different coming off the back of a win. And then Frio on Saturday, really disappointing, unfortunately, that they went down to the Blues in the manner they did. And now it's just so tight in the middle of the ladder there that it makes things a lot tougher. They could have got a good gap on the Blues there, but now they're right in the pack fighting for that top four spot.
Yeah, credit to the Carlton Football Club. They outworked Fremantle. They were inaccurate early. Sam Walsh, career high 40 disposals, was terrific. And even though Fremantle's defence has been outstanding for most of the year, and Alex Pearce was pretty good even on Saturday, but the likes of Curnow and Mackay, it's a really good 1-2 punch, and they were too good. As for the West Coast Eagles, well, they'll get Nick Nat back this week because he's trained today with the main group, and he's coming off a very good performance, 26 hit-outs, 17 disposals, 2 goals playing in the WAFL. So the Eagles might cause some trouble perhaps between now and around 23, and they've got the Tigers this week, not suggesting they'll win over at the MCG. But this rebuild, this demise of the footy club, I just don't think it's going to take as long as what some people say. And obviously a key factor on that is how they go at the draft and whether they get their hands on a Luke Jackson, for instance. If he's coming back home to WA, and that's still very much a question mark. The Dockers will be strongly courting him as well, we know. But fascinating to see after the Tim Kelly deal whether Luke Jackson is still a priority for West Coast and what they could do to find some room for him in terms of salary cap and those that are departing. And if he could come back to WA, would they be the destination club or would it be Fremantle?
Well, you'd think it'd be Frio right now with the profile of their list and where they're going. I'm not as confident as you in terms of the rebuild not taking a little bit longer for West Coast. I think they'll be a little bit of nuisance value in a few games towards the back end of the season. But overall, they're probably still in for a lot more pain probably before it starts to trend in the other direction. As you said, hitting the draft, Luke Jackson had certainly been the right list profile for West Coast as well in terms of being a young ruckman coming in terms of them rebuilding. But they've got a few games on the way home. They play Adelaide here at Optus Stadium. The Derby in round 22 will be interesting. I know Frio will start pretty warm favourites in that one, but derbies are always pretty interesting. So there's a couple of games there, potentially against the Hawks as well, have been travelling all that well. But they've got the Tigers, then they've got the Blues. The Saints, they've had their own issues as well lately as well. So it's going to be an interesting run home for West Coast. And I guess the thing for them is they'll fight through a few games here. Once it starts getting closer to the end of the season, how many players then start looking to next year if they need surgeries or whatever they need to do to try and get a head start on next year? Because the system as it is in the AFL, there's no benefit to actually winning games. And I know it sounds terrible to say that, but there's no benefit in terms of your draft position, to actually win games in the second half of the year. So West Coast, as many admirable losses as they can provide, I think actually in the long term, suits them better, which is why I'd love to see a draft lottery come in, so we don't kind of get this situation, which we do every single year, and it's not just West Coast. It's whichever teams are down in the bottom sort of four or five that start to plan a little bit earlier than the others.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about honourable losses. I think if you can finish, they're not going to obviously climb up the ladder significantly. I think if they can win, say, three of their last five games or enter the pre-season of next year with a bit of momentum, that is as much benefit as maybe two or three positions in the draft. I mean, if you're getting a top five pick, you're getting a top five pick, and that's all about what you can do from there. So it's an interesting discussion. By the way, thanks to Polaris, some news headlines. Polaris, Australia's number one selling side-by-side brand. Port Adelaide's Lachie Jones is the NAB Rising Star nominee for round 15, coming off 16 disposals and one goal against the Gold Coast Suns. And perhaps the Luke Jackson issue is the hot topic, thanks to Dardanup Butchering Company. Dardanup Butchering Company's Valley Spring Lamb, available at WA's best restaurants, hotels and cafes, as we go to the phones, 133-882. Lisa is in Ellenbrook. Hi, Lisa.
Oh, first cab off the rank tonight. Wow. Hi, Pats. Hi, Skeet. I've got a couple of things to talk about. It might be even breaking news for you guys. I don't know. Just on Luke Jackson, I hear that Peter Bell and Jamie Graham.
Yep.
Caught up with Luke Jackson on Saturday morning. They tried to disguise themselves wearing sunglasses and everything, but apparently they were seen in Melbourne talking to Luke Jackson on Saturday morning.
Mm.
And apparently West Coast Eagles, they are chasing Luke Jackson too. And I've heard that Nick Natanui has said that he will step aside and become number two ruckman to get Luke Jackson to West Coast Eagles. And he will put himself out there to talk Luke Jackson into coming to playing for them.
Thanks for your call, Lisa. That would be an intriguing one. I think it would probably, the mix for West Coast, if that was the case, I don't think would work as well. I mean, Nick Natanui's only got a few seasons probably left in his career. He's still the number one ruckman, and Luke Jackson's a pretty handy forward. In terms of the cafe meeting, that sort of stuff goes on all the time. But I don't understand, Skeet. If you are going to have a meeting, and I don't know the details around this one, why would you go to a cafe? Why would you go to someone's house or some quieter location where you can't get spotted?
Yeah, that's interesting. Or hotel foyer, probably a bit dangerous as well. There's no
someone's house.
There's no. Yeah, who knows? Look, and at least I think someone listened to Hags, Kim Hagdorn this afternoon. There is a great fascination with what a club will offer Luke Jackson and what it will mean to the list of, say, West Coast or Fremantle. And let's be honest, there are different stages already of what we know, with Fremantle have been very conscious of going down the drafting path. They've traded in some more experienced players, but they certainly haven't gone chips all in for a Luke Jackson type until maybe now. So it's going to be fascinating, because it just depends on what Simon Garlick and what Peter Bell and Justin Longmuir believe, where they are with the window and what they will have to give up and what Luke Jackson can bring to the table. We know he's a talent. Sean Darcy, though, at the moment, is the number one ruckman and, quite rightfully, would be staying in that position. So does that mean, for instance, if Rui Lobb decides to leave at the end of this season, then it opens the way, at least positionally, for Luke Jackson to come in and play as a permanent forward? There's lots of questions, and I think Luke's exploring all of these at the moment. It sounds like it. Otherwise, he would have put pen to paper.
Yeah, well, I mean, you want to have as many interested parties bidding as you possibly can, whether you're going to stay where you are, or if not, it bumps the price up all around. So it's just good negotiating tactics, whatever ends up happening. I think the Rui Lobb situation, that would probably have to unfold for Freo to get Luke Jackson in the door as well, in terms of, yeah, salaries and positionally. for that to happen. We don't know 100% yet if he does actually want to come back to WA. I heard Brad saying the same thing this morning about the meeting too. So with Liam, it's really fascinating. And I think every single team in the competition would love to have someone of Luke Jackson's calibre in their side, because he is a great talent. He's still only very young in his career for a ruckman slash key position player. So he's only going to get better as he goes through. So, the sky's the limit for him.
133-882. It's a quarter past six. Sports Day with Mark Reddings and Adam Papalia. The West Coast Eagles victorious over Essendon on the weekend. Wasn't it great to hear a crowd? And they, of course, haven't seen a victory this season, Paps. And if you're at the ground, it was something that I suppose Eagles supporters haven't had to endure lengthy periods of defeats, and that's exactly what it's been like this year. One win away from home against Collingwood, but it was a joyous occasion on Friday night. And as bad as Essendon was at times with their defensive work, West Coast showed us, I think, the energy levels in the past two games, Adam, that they are a lot better side than their ladder indicates.
Yeah, they've got some of those senior players back. Elliot Yeo playing across the back line's been a great move by the Eagles, because he gives them so much drive out of there. It was a fascinating battle, and I think it was the one that probably determined the match in the end between Tom Barras and Peter Wright. Peter Wright was everywhere in the first half, and if he kicked a bit straighter, the Bombers might have had a lead that West Coast couldn't have pegged back. And there's from that point on, though, from halftime, I mean, there was times in that first half where Peter Wright was being literally uncontested, just marking inside 50 and no one was going with him. But Tom Barras clearly lifted in the second half, and then Peter Wright couldn't get near it because Barras was spoiling everything. And I think that was what was the big thing for the Eagles to get the victory in the second half, was to take Wright's influence out of it. It was a seesawing contest. The Eagles got their nose in front. It was great to see Josh Kennedy back kicking a bag of goals with the five that he kicked on the night. And you said the crowd atmosphere that was there, definitely very different to previous Eagles games this season, and going all the way back to last year, it was 335 days between home wins for West Coast. The Eagles fans might have gone a little bit early with the chant going around the ground, because the Bombers came back with a bit of a flurry, but in the end they were able to hold on and get their second win.
Absolutely. 133-882, and we're here, of course, for the Dardner Butchering Company. Dardner Butchering Company's Valley Spring Lamb, available at WA's best restaurants, hotels and cafes. Plenty of hot topics in the world of footy, including Tom Stewart, the Geelong defender, the star, going straight to the tribunal after his bump left Dion Prestia concussed at the MCG on Saturday. Should the send-off rule be back in vogue? 133-882. Up next, though, we're going to catch up with Brady Hoff from the West Coast Eagles. It's 20 past six on this Monday night.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Time now for our West Coast Eagles update. Dig deep on Sports Day with Digger West. And Brady Hoff, young man who celebrated his second victory as an AFL player on Friday night as the West Coast Eagles defeated Essendon by 10 points. He joins us for a chat now. Brady, thanks for your time this evening.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Must have enjoyed it. 14 disposals, 3 marks against the Bombers. You get home by 10 points. And the crowd, the fans, they loved seeing their first win in 2022 at Optus Stadium.
Yeah, no, it was awesome to get another win on the board. It was a relief to break the drought, I suppose. We had a few good games there last week. We were pretty strong, I thought, against the Cats. And, yeah, it was good to get some reward. But we'll shift our focus on to Tigers next week.
It was a good performance, Brady. 10-point win in the end. A really seesawing contest right the way through. But how much does it mean to the guys? I mean, it's been pretty tough through this season, you know, the 9-match losing streak and so many challenges on and off the field. What was the feeling like in the rooms after the game?
Yeah, no, it was awesome. You know, there was for us young boys to get a win in front of the home crowd was just great. You know, Jamo and Rhett's first win, my second win. There's a few younger boys in the side. And yeah, like I said, get the relief and break the drought was great. And to do it in front of the crowd was even better. So yeah, it was a great turnout. And yeah, it was really good.
You mentioned Rhett Bazzo. He seems to have slid into the back line very comfortably.
Yeah, definitely. He's had a few big roles for his first two games. You know, Jeremy Cameron last week, and then Harrison Jones this week. So, but he slipped in really well, and he's playing his role. So, yeah, he's going really well.
How have you gone with the adjustment to the AFL? It's been a rapid rise for you to come in and be drafted and then be thrown straight into it. You were on fire, particularly early on in that game against the Bombers.
Yeah. It felt like it started quite well. You know, I've just tried to play my role throughout the game. And yeah, like you said, it has been a bit of a rise from country footy last year to this year. But yeah, you know, I've loved every bit of it and hopefully can keep embracing each challenge that comes my way.
What about the night itself, where you looked as if you got up the ground more, played a bit on the wing? Can you tell us, was it a slightly different role to what you had previously played in your seven other games?
Yeah, I played on the wing this week, and I played on the wing against Geelong as well, and yeah, Adelaide. So I started down back earlier in the year, but yeah, I've transferred up to the wing now and just keep learning my new role. I'm really liking it up there, and like, yeah, can use my running capabilities, I think, a bit more, and yeah, just keep embracing the challenge and keep working on my craft, and hopefully can keep going well.
Speaking with Brady Hoff from the West Coast Eagles here on Sports Day. Not sure how much you weighed when you arrived at the club, Brady, but has there been a bit of an emphasis on getting some more bulk on that frame of yours?
Yeah, definitely. Put on about 5 or 6 kilos since I've been here, and yeah, you know, trying to get on some weight, but yeah, you know, just king with this lighter frame, I've got to use, you know, my speed and things like that. So hopefully, yeah, can put on a bit of weight, but it's getting there.
And you're one of the young players. We mentioned Rhett Bazo as well. But having a senior group, having had the break during the bye, obviously COVID and injuries, there's been a whole lot of problems. But you're getting some experience into that side. And Nick Natanui looks like he might be on the cusp of returning as well. So this team is slowly but surely starting to resemble the club that we've known for the past decade.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there was a few injuries early on which presented some opportunities for us young boys, but to get the more experienced players back and play alongside them is great. You know, we had 14 listed players playing the Waffle this weekend and they got the win. And yeah, like you said, Nick played in the Waffle last week and looks to return if he gets through training this week. So really excited. Hopefully, yeah, to play alongside him would be great.
Brady, you're from down in the southwest. What's your reaction been back in Harvey, seeing you play, seven games this season?
Yeah, no, my parents and family and all my friends, yeah, they're loving it just as much as me, I think. It's been great to, you know, come from, yeah, little town of Harvey and come up here and just, you know, do what I'm doing. I'm just absolutely loving it, and I think so is my family and everyone back home.
Your dad played in a flag, I believe, in the Southwest Footy League with Harvey Brunswick, and your mum was a state basketballer as well. So there's some sporting talent within the family.
Yeah. Like you said, dad was pretty good down at HBL, and yeah, mum was a really handy basketballer as well. So I did play a bit of basketball growing up, but you know, footy's taken over now, and yeah, there is a bit of talent in the family.
And who have you been leaning on at West Coast since you've walked in the doors to try? You've mentioned a couple of times trying to work on your craft. Who is it that you're trying to base your game on, or trying to chat to them as much and learn as much as you can off them?
When I first came in and was training down back, it was, you know, Liam Duggan and Tom Cole and Shannon Hearn, players like that, you know, really experienced players. And yeah, I'm trying to pick their brains as much as I was early on. And you know, coming into the midfield a bit more now, it's, you know, you're getting to pick the brains of Luke Shuey and Dom Sheed, both premiership players. And yeah, you know, I'm learning so much off them really quickly. So hopefully can, yeah, keep learning and keep improving my game.
Well, you mentioned Richmond this week, the MCG, that's a fortress for them. How many times have you been to the home of footy, as they call it, Brady?
Nah, I haven't been there yet. Hopefully it'll be my first game there this weekend. But yeah, really excited. Keen for the challenge.
Absolutely. I mean, that brings me to my next point. Is it something you've always grown up as a kid thinking one day potentially the MCG playing for whoever it might be, as it turns out, the West Coast Eagles? It's just got such great history attached to it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I used to dream about playing at the MCG, and yeah, so hopefully, you know, do it this weekend. It's just going to be unreal. So, keen for the challenge. And, you know, they're a really good side. And, like I said, it's going to be a massive challenge. But we're going over there to try and win, and we'll plan to win. So hopefully we go pretty well.
Just quickly, in terms of Adam mentioned who has been a bit of a mentor for you from a playing perspective. But coaching-wise, who's in your ear more than anyone else at the club?
all the coaches have been great. You know, they're all really helping me out, and there's no one in particular. But, you know, like I said, all the players and all the coaching have been great for us younger boys, and hopefully can keep developing and, yeah, be a part of the future.
Well, Brody, thank you so much for your time tonight. Congratulations on a victory against the Bombers. 14 disposals, 3 marks. And you get to sing this team song for the second time in your career. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day. And best of luck against the Tigers this weekend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
There it is, Brady Hoff from the West Coast Eagles. He was taken from Peel in the 2021 National Draft with pick number 31. Digging deep is what all great sports people do, just like the team at Digger West, the earth-moving attachment specialist. And by the way, the hot topic, thanks to Dardanup Butchering Company, Dardanup Butchering Company's Valley Spring Lamb, available at WA's best restaurants, hotels and cafes. 133-882. That was our West Coast Eagles update, thanks to Digger West.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. It is 26 before 7 as we roll into our news headlines thanks to Polaris. Thank you, Australia, for making Polaris Australia's number one selling side-by-side brand 21 years in a row. The first test between Australia and Sri Lanka begins on Wednesday afternoon our time. Yet to get the lineup for the Australians, but they've had some injury concerns, so it'd be fascinating to see what the likes of Andrew McDonald and Pat Cummins come up with as to a 11-man side. And over at Leeds, there's been a rain delay on the final day of the test match between England and New Zealand. England well-placed to clean sweep the series with Ben Stokes as captain for the first time fully, and of course Brendan McCallum taking over as coach. They're 2 for 183. That is leaving them with less than 100 to score on the final day after New Zealand made 329 and 326. England 360 and currently at the crease, or certainly currently in the sheds waiting to go out onto the crease. Ollie Pope on 81 and Joe Root. What a performer he has been, 55 not out. 133-882. Let's go back to the phones. Donny's in Spearwood. Hi, Don.
Good evening, boys. How are you traveling?
Well.
Good to hear. A couple of things. I was going to mention about a young fella you had on just before. And also young Bezo. Another one, I went to Offal and watched young Edwards. I mean, he was marking everything coming his way. I'll give you some players. Bailey Williams, trait. Jackson Nelson, trait. Zach Langdon, 50-50, stays and goes. Petrovsky, sit and stays and goes. Want to do better than what he did in Waffle. Okay? Xavier O'Neill, 50-50, will be there or not. You know? And you go watch young Jack Williams, mate. He's got a beautiful kick. He's got a good pair of hands. You know, another 12 months, he'll be a key position player. And another one is young fella that got this year in mid, Jay Cully. He's got a beautiful kick on him. And don't forget Campbell Chester. He got injured first 5 minutes of the pre-season. So a few young fellas coming in, and just cut the rest of them. Simple as that. I mean, just show no mercy. And that's how it is. It's a tough. It's not a sport. It's a business. To be in saying that, Eagles have been loyal club to all their players. Now, at the end of the year, they should say to Kennedy and Shannon Hurd, listen, fellas, this is it. Thanks very much. Great champions of the club, but time has come to turn a wheel. And I'll listen to your comments, boys.
Thanks, Donny. Look, the wheel's certainly turning at West Coast. It's just how much it turns will be the big question. I think Hearn and Kennedy, as great as they've been, they're probably, for West Coast to be better going forward, they're probably not going to be there next year. So they'll get a good send-off. It's a tough one, though, Ski, because Hearn's played pretty good footy, and Josh Kennedy kicked 5 on the weekend, and some of his efforts for a man of his vintage, which really isn't that old in the general scheme of things, but in footy sense it is, he's still doing those pressure things and those inspiring things to lift his team. On the other hand, those other names he mentioned earlier, Donny, you say trade them, but I don't know how much market value there would be for a trade. I think it'll just be, in the end, West Coast looking at those on their list that are contracted and that aren't contracted and probably moving them on the ones that they want to. I'm not saying all of those ones in your list that you said there, Donny, would certainly fit into that category. But there's going to be some pretty tough calls made by West Coast at the end of the season, Skeet, because they need to really start the rebuild in earnest.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Donny made some good points with regards to some of those young players. Keep playing Rhett Bazo. Keep playing the likes of Brady Hoff. Give the likes of Jack Williams. Just whether it's Waffle 40, he's a very young man, but there. Campbell Chess is injured. So there's the sprinkling of young players there. They always have to build on that. And look, I agree. I think Shannon Hearn, Josh Kennedy, they could play on next year theoretically, but I think Josh Kennedy's body is cooked. Maybe Shannon Hearn not so much, but in terms of developing, rebuilding this side, whether that's in the best interests of the club, given Oscar Allen returns to the lineup next year, does he become a replacement for Josh Kennedy? I'm not sure he can replicate the productivity in front of goals that Josh has done over such a long period of time. But yeah, there's certainly, I think there's a bit more. And the thing is with West Coast, they are such a good club at bouncing back after having a bad year. I've got a fair degree of confidence that they will be able to turn this around quicker than what some people are saying, 4, 5, 6 years. I just think they're too good a club to head down that path. Des is in Yokine. Hi, Des.
Hi. I've been a cat for about 70-odd years, and what Tommy Stewart did was really, really stupid and really, really bad, and he has to go. And I've also been a member of Fremantle for about 24 years. I think I've only missed about 8 games. What Fife did was probably accidental, but going to one of my favourite footballers, Toby Green, he got 6 weeks for, being silly, but I do think there is a special Toby rule.
Toby tax, you mean?
Yeah, Toby Tax, that'll do. Yeah, you get out, he does, I love the way he plays football. But, yeah, I just think when something comes up on the screen, he's okay, Toby, you're dead. So, get out, that'll do, I'm gone.
Thanks, Des.
I'll listen to you. Right.
Thank you, mate. I think it's hard to compare those two those two incidents, I think. The Toby Green one, very different. It was shoulder contact and he was walking through the umpire, really, when it came to it. Whereas Nat Fyfe's one, he got pushed into the umpire by a Carlton player, took a step forward and just put his hand out to sort of brace and stop them colliding with each other. I saw no problems with that one whatsoever on the weekend, and I actually couldn't believe that it was being built up as something that he could be suspended for, seeing as he was pushed into it by a Blues player. And Skeet, he had the ultimate defence that he could have gone into it with, because he tried to kick the footy to the umpire earlier on in the game, so he clearly can't tell the difference between who his teammates are and who the umpires are, so maybe he needs to get the vision checked a little bit.
Yeah, a bit of criticism of Nat Fyfe and his performance at the weekend, and didn't look fit and his shoulder's not right. Yeah, look, it didn't look like the Nat Fyfe we remember, but bear in mind there's been a lot of time between Nat Fyfe playing continuous footy, and that hasn't been the case for the best part of 18 months. So I think the club will show absolutely as much patience as they need to try and work out not just about Fyfe's form, but also where he plays best. And that's, I suppose, a bit of a quandary at the moment, because Will Brodie doing such a good job in that inside mid role means that Nat Fyfe probably is better served in attack, but whether he is able to give the Dockers what they need remains to be seen. Let's go out to Mouse for a chat tonight. Hi, Mouse.
Mark and Paps, how are you?
We're good.
Well, thank you.
Good on you, mate. Now, Port Adelaide coming over here this week. if you look at them at their position in the ladder, about 11th or 10th in the ladder, you'd be thinking, oh, bit of an easy pickings there for Fremantle. But Port Adelaide are actually the form team of the comp. From round six onwards, they are 7-2. So if they go on that form, they'd be actually up the top of the ladder. They've lost more games than, won more games than Brisbane, Melbourne, and all these teams put together. So watch out for Fremantle. They wouldn't want to take that easy. And there's 1,400 Port Adelaide members around West Australia. So let's hope they all get down and cheer them and get to the Empire Park pre-game function as well. Liam Baker, he looks like wanting to come home. He's not putting a pen on contract like Jackson. I hear that he's bought a house around Lathlane Park. So watch out for that space for Liam Baker coming back to the Eagles.
That's like Sheeds had always... Kevin Sheedy had about 10 times had bought a property in Applecross, but it never eventuated.
No, he hasn't got one of them. I was with him all weekend. And just on Kevin Sheedy, by the way, he was sitting next to me during the game and he was saying that... I had him doing the function rooms. He said that Adam Simpson has definitely done the right thing playing all the young kids early in the year when they had all those problems, and it'll be much more of the benefit. And he said that he said the same thing to Ben Rutten. He said on the board, you know, that back to play the kids and I'll back you. So, because the Essendon players on the weekend, they actually played on average 60 games less than the Eagles players. So that's two full seasons or more had played the Bombers players compared to the Eagles players. So he thinks that the, and Dustin Fletcher and the others around me, Mark Harvey was the next to me as well, by the way, and he thinks that they all think that the Eagles will cause a lot of pain for a lot of teams going back into the forward. And if they get everyone right and get, like, remember there's Tom Cole, all these other blokes out injured at the moment, so you get all them back next year. And like you said, Mark, I think that they'll rebound. I hear Melbourne, there's a few players wanting to get out of there now, so a few just unhappy campers that might want to shift, so watch out for that space as well. So you never know, there could be swings and roundabouts of all these teams everywhere come to the end of the season. A lot of people, a lot of players who are former WA people are looking to get back here. Don't worry about that.
Good on you, Mouse. Thank you very much. That's, we'll classify as an AFL update thanks to Hungry Jack's. The burgers are better at Hungry Jack's. By the way, our best caller tonight wins a Whopper voucher thanks to Hungry Jack's. In a nutshell, Paps, how many weeks for Tom Stewart?
Four for me. Four, yep. I think it could potentially be a little bit more, but it was assessed as careless, wasn't it, rather than intentional. So it'll be on that sort of middle-tier scale. A lot of talk about the send-off rule today. I'm not exactly a fan of that one yet because we've seen incidents this year where players have been cited at the tribunal, been given weeks and gotten off, like Willy Rioli in the game earlier on this season. Would be keen to hear from the listeners on that one on 133-882. But, yeah, what about you? I reckon about 4 weeks for Tom Stewart.
Yeah, four. Yeah, I mean, his record is good. He's not a dirty player by any means. But the consequences were they lost one of their best players. They lost by a couple of points, and he was off the ground for the bulk of the match. So, look, the send-off rule, it's used in rugby, rugby league, in soccer. It's used in basketball. It's used in a variety of sports. We haven't gone down that path yet. I'm a bit with you, Paps. There needs to be some tinkering or certainly examination of that. I'm not sure we have enough incidents like the Andrew Gaff, Brayshaw pitcher, the one that we saw on the weekend. I'm not sure we have enough of those to constitute the red card or the send-off rule, but it's certainly become a point of discussion. 133-882, of course, Perth's Festival of International Football icon is coming to Optus Stadium July 22 and 23. On the 22nd, Crystal Palace plays Leeds United, and on the following night, Saturday the 23rd of July, Manchester United takes on Aston Villa. Tickets are available now through Ticketek, but to win your way into a premium open box for you and a friend, including catering, enter now at icanwin.com.au. More of Sports Day up shortly.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Great to have your company on this Monday night. Mark Redding's Adam Papalia through until 8 o'clock this evening. An AFL update thanks to Hungry Jack's. The new Jack's Fried Chicken Cheesy Bacon Burger only at Hungry Jack's. The burgers are better. We're talking a lot of footy tonight at 133-882, including the send-off rule. Shane's in Mandurah wants to join the conversation. Hi, Shane.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. I was just thinking, why don't they bring in the sin bin, the 10-minute sin bin? How much of a penalty would it have been if Geelong had been limited to five guys in their back line? You know, the opposing teams could have banged all their guns into the centre and tried to get as many centre clearances into an outnumbered forward line, and take advantage of that for 10 minutes. And then if the guy commits a second offence later in the match, then sure, send him off. But it forces the team to play one down for 10 minutes, and at this level, that could be a huge disadvantage.
There certainly would be, because of, you know, manning up such a crucial thing when you're trying to lock the play down. They'd just be stacking the back line if you were down that many players scared. I'm not sure how entertaining it would be if everyone's just camped in the one part of the ground. But I guess it comes back to how do you grade the initial incident and who's handing out this penalty? Is it up to the umpires? Is it up to the video review umpire? Do they need somebody? I think if they were going to have a red card situation or even something like this, they'd almost need Michael Christian as the match review officer or someone like that to be there on hand to assess the incident in real time. But there's so much grey area in the game, and you know whether they're contesting the ball or not contesting the ball. Is it an accident? Is it a reasonable action? We argue about this stuff for 2 or 3 days after incidents happen before we try to get an answer at it at the tribunal. I think it's going to leave it up to too many instances where you might get somebody sent off that hasn't done the wrong thing accidentally.
Yep, that's a fair call. And look, speaking of send-offs, last night in the State of Origin Rugby League, it was a 10-minute sin-binning for a Queensland player, which resulted in a try late in the first half. And I think that in soccer, when a team is reduced by one with a red card and the rugby codes, I think it does have a significant impact. Whether it would be the same at AFL level, that's another aspect of this. But you're right. How do you judge this? The only one I'll quickly say is that in the WAFL, they do have, and it's not directly related to the sin binning, but if a player is reported for head-high contact and the player who has been collected goes off the ground to be assessed, a concussion test, well, the blue card is eligible to come out from an umpiring perspective where both the victim, shall we say, and the offender or the player that's been reported spend 15 minutes or however long it takes to get that assessment completed. So that's the only type of send-off situation I know of in footy at the moment in AFL/WAFL.
We don't see many match day reports anymore, do we?
No.
It's usually just left to happen after the fact and be dealt with by the match review officer to get to that situation. It's certainly a difficult one. In my opinion, I think there's a lot of other rules that we could clean up first before we start looking at this one. And the 50-metre penalty for infringing on the protected area is one that needs to be fixed tomorrow, not at the end of the season. Did you see the one on the weekend where it came off the interchange bench? It's those ones that aren't
frustrating.
The play at all. Gets so frustrating, I think, for fans. And they're, I think, having just as big of an impact on a game, if not more, because they're putting teams into goal-scoring positions from them rather than something like this with the red card.
Absolutely. Time for a sports update. Thanks to Century 21, selling or renting, century21.com.au. And Matthew Nix has told Fox Footy tonight that Taylor Walker is close to re-signing with the club. So the veteran set to go around one more time. It's 6 before 7 here on Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Yes, coming up after the 7 o'clock news, we'll check in with Craig Gabriel. Day one of Wimbledon underway. Bit of rain over there, but hopefully some action tonight. Jeremy Barnard, the East Perth coach, after a big win for the Royals over the Tigers, and of course some premiership celebrations, 1972 and I think 2002 teams getting back together. John Saxon, the CEO of NRLWA, off the back of the State of Origin. Can we get a team in the national competition? And Nick O'Hearn, of course, a golfer who's turned to becoming an author. We're here for the Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended until Thursday at Toolkit Depot. Get more kit and earn more Depot Dollars. And for Kia, Australia's most wanted, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage, cars of the year.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. By the way, congratulations to Shane in Mandurah. He picks up, being our best caller, a Whopper voucher thanks to Hungry Jack's. Let's roll straight into our first guest of this second hour. His name is Craig Gabriel, the Nine Radio tennis correspondent extraordinaire at Wimbledon. Good evening to you, Craig. And first of all, as we ask at Wimbledon each and every time we make a phone call, what's the weather like?
They started play and guess what? They stopped play. there's like this spitting rain that is just passing through the area at the moment. So there was about maybe 40 minutes of play and now the covers are on the court. So yeah, they can't take any risk because the grass anyway is very slick at the moment because it's all so fresh and you get a bit of rain on that and it's going to make it an ice skating rink. So that's why they've stopped play for a short while.
Such a great tournament, Craig. How does it feel being back?
Oh, it's always wonderful. You know, I was here last year and it was just a weird tournament. It was the worst Wimbledon I'd ever been at, and I've been at almost 40 of them. But it's back to normal. Full crowds, no restrictions, no conditions or anything like that. So, it should be a pretty good one. I'm sorry about the Russian and the Belarusian players not being here because I know some of them quite well, people like Daniil Medvedev and Karen Khachanov. But, you know, I think once we really get into the tournament, the negative stuff and the controversies about all that will go into the background.
Who are the biggest hopes for the Aussies on the men's and women's side?
Well, I should just say there is one Aussie on court at the moment, Max Purcell, who came through the qualifying rounds. He's playing the French lefty, Adrien Mannarino. Mannarino is up 3-1 in the first set. Purcell has got a break point, so that's what the situation will be when they return after this rain delay. Off the Australians, you'd have to pretty much say it's Nick. Kyrgios has got a relatively good draw. He's playing very well on the grass. He's played 9 matches, won 7 of them. So that's very good match preparation for him coming into Wimbledon. And the way he's talking, he feels pretty excited about it as well.
Of course, the women's side of it, we're quite excited about a couple of WA connections, Maddie Inglis, Astra Sharma, yep, amongst those who are going to be trying to advance as deep as they can.
And both are on today. Maddie Inglis will be playing Dalma Galfi of Hungary, and Astra Sharma will be playing Tatiana Maria of Germany. Maria's been around a while. Galfi, I don't know much about. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, both came through the qualifying rounds, and it was fantastic to see that. I mean, a lot of Australians advanced this year. The most we had coming through from qualifying since 1995, which is a great effort. So the two girls are part of 15 Australians in the respective singles events.
Craig, the reception for Novak Djokovic, he's scheduled to appear on court tonight. What are you expecting?
Oh, look, I think they'll give him a warm reception as the defending champion, and as tradition dictates here at Wimbledon, the men's title holder will play the first match on centre court the following year. So I think that'll be fine. At this point, will be his last major of the year because he's not allowed to enter the United States because he's unvaccinated, and he's made it clear that he's not going to change that. We'll see. I think certainly favoritism is with Djokovic, but crowd favoritism would be either with Andy, obviously, Murray, who plays James Duckworth tonight over here, or Rafa Nadal.
Craig, always a pleasure. We'll chat to you, no doubt, hopefully with the skies blue and clear for the remainder of the tournament. But enjoy the strawberries and cream and all the other good things at Wimbledon.
Well, I'll certainly give it a shot. We'll talk about it maybe the next time.
Always a pleasure. Craig Gabriel joining us, our Nine Radio tennis correspondent. Not a bad gig, that, perhaps.
Very good. I'd love to get to Wimbledon. It's on my bucket list. I've never been over there, but it does feel a little bit different this year, doesn't it? No Ash Barty. It's not quite the same. And it was so good 12 months ago when she was able to win it. But going into a tournament and not having Ash Barty there, it doesn't have quite the same feel for us Aussies.
No, not the same. I was at Wimbledon during the Olympics and it started to rain. They didn't bring the roof over until about an hour later. So I had to catch the tube back to London. So very strange setup, but such a great place, so much history. Thanks to Craig Gabriel. And we were here for Kia, Australia's most wanted, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage, Cars of the Year. Coming up next, we're going to catch up with Jeremy Barnard, the East Perth coach in the Waffle.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, Cars of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Great to have your company on Sports Day as we roll into our Waffle update, thanks to the Kia EV6 and Sportage, Cars of the Year. And East Perth had a terrific win on the weekend. Their coach is Jeremy Barnard. He joins us for a chat. Barney, thanks for your time. And that, must rate, is close to your best win of 2022.
Oh, I think it would be easily against a really quality opposition. Haven't had a terrific couple of weeks, especially last week against Peel. Brought in some new debutants and we're able to come away with a win. So it's just all credit to the boys.
You mentioned bringing in some fresh faces. How much in hindsight did that help provide the energy that was required? Because let's be honest, after half time, you kicked 5 goals, Claremont 4. It was a bit of a grind, but you've got the job done.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Bringing Tom Graham in, who I played footy with his dad, definitely helped us out. We had, an average games in our forward line of 5 games. So the boys were definitely bringing the youthful enthusiasm. And we knew Claremont would definitely come back at us. They're a quality side with, fantastic players on every line, but we managed to hang on, and it was really important not only for us on the day, but for our season as well.
How impressed were you with Christian Amajuri, who kicked the 3 goals?
Yeah, he's just the heart and soul of the East Perth Football Club. He's one of our hardest trainers, doesn't miss a session. Really exemplifies the Royals' way. We're actually after a bit more forward ground ball pressure, so we took him out of the midfield and put him in there, and he was also gave us the ground ball pressure as well as creating some opportunities. The last goal in the last quarter was really helped steady the ship, so he played a fantastic game.
Had the 20-year premiership anniversary celebrations on the weekend. Was much of that made for the league team as well? Did that help inspire you? I hear there was a few interesting speeches and things before the game from some of the past players that certainly fired a few up that were in the functions. But did you make much of it?
We only really mentioned it at three-quarter time. You just got to be a little bit careful with some of the. Sometimes you can get a bit distracted, but the boys, they certainly mixed in with the premiership players of both eras. And we just mentioned, in the last quarter that, we had the guys here, and, with the never say die attitude, that's how they were able to get success. So we sort of drew on that, but which we're able to do.
Yes, the 1972 premiership reunion as well, and Malcolm Gregory Brown amongst others there. And coincidentally, your final score on the weekend, Barney, was 72 points. Got to ask you about Angus Shoemaker, 34 disposals. He travelled, of course, with the West Coast Eagles. Is he going to be just a very good Waffle player, or do you think there's a window for him still?
Oh, I think he was pretty close in the mid-season draft. I know a couple of clubs were talking to him. He certainly got some elite AFL attributes, all being his kick. And also his size, he's 6'3". I think he's just a terrific player, and he's able to get his body right this year compared to the last couple of years, and really he's helped our midfield no end. So there's certainly opportunities there for him, I'm sure.
You mentioned the mid-season draft, and Seb Quek was instrumental in, I guess, much of your forward craft in the first part of the year. You lose him, put a lot of pressure. We saw you against South Fremantle, and Tom Metat was terrific, but it's a big loss, isn't it, mid-season?
Yeah, it is, Skeet. I mean, the biggest part about it, you certainly never want to hold back young players from going into the AFL, but when they get taken mid-season, the disadvantage you've got is you can't recruit for that player. If you lose them at the end of the year in November or even in January, you've got a chance you can recruit and perhaps fill, or you have a development plan for within your club to to fill the gap. But when they go mid-season, you're not going to get a quality full forward from any other club in Australia and in the state league. So that's the disadvantage. And it took us a little bit sort of to come up with a bit of a plan about which was the best person to fill that role. And eventually we went with young Tom Graham. Also having Nick Robinson back just makes a huge difference to our forward line with his, you know, his pressure and the way he coaches the players out in the field. He does a great job.
Jeremy, what does the win mean? You kind of touched on a little bit before, but in terms of your season and the belief in your side, having a win like that over Claremont to be able to now push on in this second half of the season?
Yeah, well, it keeps us in touch. I mean, Swan District's are two games ahead at the moment. And it certainly, it just keeps us there or thereabouts. I mean, we'd definitely have to keep going with our form and our winning form in the next, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. Otherwise, we'll fall too far behind. But it's fantastic for the club. It gets the boys up and about. This is the hardest 6 weeks of any season. The back end of June and into July. You know, we've been training for close to 24 weeks already. So, yeah, just giving a bit of a boost on the field, just letting the boys enjoy their moments. It's going to help us no end.
A general buy this week in the Waffle. So what's the plan? Do you give the guys a bit of a break just to refresh, or do you hit them hard with, as we said, trying to get into that second half of the season and really finish the season strongly?
We're always mindful that the players, and not only the players, but the staff are part-time. So this first part of the bye week, we always just train Monday, Wednesday, and we give everyone virtually Thursday to Monday off. The players have to do a little bit of work, but it's just about refreshing them physically and mentally, and as well as the staff, because the staff do a bloody lot of work behind the scenes. That's coaches and medical, so giving them a break, and then full ball into West Coast the week after, which will be a very, very tough game.
Yeah, well, they obviously had a great result on the weekend. I'm not sure Nick Natanui is still going to be there in a couple of weeks' time, which might make your task a little bit easier.
Well, here's hoping. Yeah, I'd rather not play against him. I'm not sure they might want him playing for the gate, but yeah, I mean, they've started to get, you know, their top end talent back of the AFL, which has pushed their sort of development players down. And we certainly hope we catch them on the hop a little bit, but it's going to be a really tough game for us. We understand that.
Jeremy, congratulations. Terrific victory over Claremont on the weekend. Enjoy the break as it comes, and best of luck for the second half of the season. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day.
Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.
Jeremy Barnard, the coach of the Royals. As we said, they're in seventh spot, 4 wins and 6 losses. Through the course of the weekend, perhaps some interesting results. East Fremantle getting up in a tight game against Peel at the Wacker, 12-16 to 12-5. East Perth, as we mentioned, 26-point winners over Claremont. West Perth, 17-10 to Perth's 7-9. So the Falcons ticking along beautifully. And how about Swan District's form? 16-8-104 to Subiaco, 7-11-53. So the reigning premiers, not saying they can't win it, perhaps, but they are in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, they certainly are. And, you know, the good thing about this season, and we've mentioned it lots of times on Sports Day, is just how even the competition has actually been. And to see a heap of upsets on the weekend as well, none more so, I reckon, than West Coast beating South Fremantle. It's a great season so far. As I just said, I mean, I don't think Nick Natanui is going to be there in a couple of weeks, but the Eagles are looking a little bit stronger, and they were pretty delighted to break through for a win.
Yeah, absolutely. Swan Districts, by the way, knocking over Subiaco at their Steel Blue Oval. And you mentioned the upset of the round. It was the West Coast Eagles getting their first victory under Robert Wiley this season, 13-12 to 7-7. And what a performance. Nick Natanui, of course, coming back, kicking 2 goals, taking some marks, and adding his expertise to the ruck craft at the West Coast. And the Bulldogs told Curley none too impressed with what they dished up. That is our Waffle update for Australia's most wanted, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage. They are the cars of the year. More coming up right after this.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Great to have your company on Sports Day. Thanks to Repco Authorised Service for expert car service. Book online at repcoservice.com. We're talking State of Origin Rugby League last night. New South Wales did a number on Queensland, 44 points to 12. And John Saxon's the CEO of NRLWA. And, of course, so much attention on the West over the past 4 or 5 days. John, thanks for your time. And you must have been delighted with the crowd of 59,000 plus and the spectacle that Perth put on.
Yeah, it was magic, Skeet, and good evening, Adam, as well. Guys, what can you say? I mean, I think the spectacle, the passion, the electric atmosphere that was evident there at Optus Stadium last night. It was to see 60,000 people, or just short of 60,000 people, predominantly West Australians, watching two alien states, being Queensland and New South Wales, go at it. It was really encouraging for the game of rugby league moving forward. And interesting, I noticed one of the headlines in one of the New South Wales papers today, I think, was Perthquake, which I thought was pretty appropriate in terms of, I guess, the way that the Blues did a job on the Maroons in that second half, guys.
And as we said, this is our second State of Origin encounter in the West. The NRL heavyweights were in town. What was the impression you got from them with regards to the importance of WA to the national fabric of the game, but also Origin on an irregular basis being played here?
I think the hierarchy of the NRL, Skeet, love coming to Perth. As you say, this is the second time. The first outing in 2019 was a sellout. This one was a sellout, again, 59,000 plus, just under the 60,000 mark. So I don't think there's any doubt that we'll be seeing Origin come back to Perth on a pretty well a regular basis, probably a three-yearly basis, because I think games also have to be shared with Adelaide and Melbourne as well as obviously the annual games in Brisbane and Sydney. But in terms of the future of the game here, yes, there was a lot of the NRL hierarchy in town, a lot of commissioners, and certainly Andrew Abdo. They would certainly be leaving Perth knowing that there is a huge appetite for a franchise in this city moving forward. I think everyone got in their ears, in particular a lot of the politicians, Minister Roger Cook being one, Peter Tinley and a number of other people in the function that I was at last night. And you were there too, Skeet, of course, enjoying it. And I think also the lasting impression is that 60,000 people from Western Australia turning up last night to watch rugby league. You know, it is the shop front of rugby league State of Origin, and I think that that really sends a very strong message, in my opinion, back to headquarters that there is a demand and interest and appetite in rugby league moving forward, and it can only help our cause for a franchise here in the future.
We all certainly hope that is the case, John. I feel like we've had this discussion quite a few times over the last few years, and we all keep pushing, and there's great support here in WA. But what needs to happen? What can we do to actually get something moving? And what's sort of the time frame in your mind for the NRL Commissioner to make a decision on a potential franchise here in the West?
Yeah, perhaps it's a good question, and you're absolutely right. We have had several false starts in the past. It's been extremely frustrating for the stakeholders of the game here. But what I'm taking out of what's happened in the last 24 hours, I think it's the most positive signs I have had that Perth is really front and centre in the conversations for the 18th franchise. We know the Dolphins come in next year, but the NRL have started the vision for the 18th, which is a far more practical number rather than 17 in the national competition. But I think the CEO, Andrew Abdo, of course, he made some comments last night about to expect an invitation in the months ahead for expressions of interest from interested parties for the 18th franchise. He has told us that that's a very positive step forward for us, because we've never really had that official invitation. So it appears that is coming. That's very, very positive. But also ongoing are these conversations with the North Sydney Bears, We know that Daniel Dixon, the chairman of the North Sydney Bears, has been in town the last 48 hours. He's got meetings again tonight and tomorrow in relation to a possible, I guess, call it a joint venture between the North Sydney Bears and Western Australia in terms of a combined bid for the 18th franchise. Also, Billy Moore, one of the board members, apart from being a Queensland legend, he's also a board member on the North Sydney Bears board, and he is in town as well attending those meetings. So I'm optimistic that some very positive discussions will take place over the next 24 hours in relation to that possible collaboration between the Bears and Western Australia. At the end of the day, whatever it takes for us to get into that competition, it's very important for the game of rugby league in Western Australia, I feel, for us to get that 18th franchise. And I'm confident that stakeholders here, interested parties, will put our best foot forward when it's called upon.
John Saxon, the CEO of NRLWA, joining us on Sports Day. In brief, Sacco, it's a case of the North Sydney Bears cooperation or partnership looks the most likely outcome at this stage. We believe Peter Volandis is receptive to that possibility. Home games in WA, but also playing some of their away games at the picturesque North Sydney Oval. Is that roughly how it's been plotted?
Yeah, you're right, Skeet. It's probably you probably encapsulated the concept pretty well. The team would be based out of Perth. It would be certainly a West Australian franchise. It would have to be branded the Bears, whatever that might look like. I would imagine, be it the bi-coastal Bears, the West Coast Bears, whatever that might be. But that tapping into the power and the heritage of that North Sydney Bears brand is a really powerful thing. There's still a lot of fans and members that exist around this country, for their beloved North Sydney Bears. But playing a number of games, yes, in Sydney at North Sydney Oval, perhaps even the odd game regionally in New South Wales, but the majority of the games would be played here in Perth indeed.
Sacco, we didn't get the result we wanted last night being Queenslanders, but the series is beautifully poised at one game apiece. Of course, both sides head to Queensland and Suncorp Stadium. Should be an absolute beauty to decide it. And there'll be a few sore celebrities or politicians this afternoon after having a game of touch football this morning. Everyone got through unscathed, I'm hoping, and hopefully the bodies aren't going to punish them over the next 24 hours.
Yeah, well, I don't know about getting through unscathed, Skeet, but I certainly got banged up, mate. but it was a terrific game. We kicked off at about 20 past 7 this morning at Optus Stadium. We used the same dressing rooms as the Maroons and the Blues, and we had the national anthem. And, it was a star-studded lineup. We had Billy Moore playing for Queensland. We had Robbie Farah playing for the Blues. We had Damian Martin playing for the Blues as well. And a lot of the politicians, our Deputy Premier, Roger Cook, Peter Tinley, and numerous others. But it was a lot of fun. We do it as much as possible in and around the major NRL events when they come to Perth. And, sadly, Skeet and perhaps New South Wales won that as well. They won last night. They won the all-important touch game today. And also they won the boys and girls under 19 State of Origin and the women's State of Origin. So they've had a clean sweep so far. A bit depressed about the boys' effort this morning. But all eyes now on Brizzy, July 13, Suncorp Stadium, and it's a decider. So it's all on the table and there for the taking. And it'd be very interesting to see how the Queenslanders bounce back.
Yeah, terrific series. We love State of Origin, John. You've been integral to making sure rugby league is front and centre in this date. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day.
A pleasure, Skeet, and Paps, and thanks for all your support of the game, guys.
There it is. John Saxon, the CEO of NRLWA, off the back of the State of Origin last night, 44-12 in favour of New South Wales against Queensland. More of Sports Day coming your way shortly.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Great to have your company on Sports Day as we roll into our next segment. Thanks to Toolkit Depot. Depot Dollars has been extended until Thursday at Toolkit Depot. Get more kit, earn more Depot Dollars. And we're talking with pro golfer / author. His name's Nick O'Hearn. He joins us for a chat now. Nick, thanks for your time tonight.
No problem at all.
Let's talk. Before we get into golf, you've turned to writing a book and it's titled How to Play Your Best Golf. In a nutshell, what did you find more difficult, crafting a career or trying to put into words just how tough that game you love?
No one's ever asked that question. That's a good one. It's not easy, to be honest. I never thought of myself as an author until I published my first book about 6 years ago. And then this one I did all throughout the lockdowns. I just needed something to do, start writing, because I live in Melbourne these days, and we were locked down there for a good year or two. So came about through all that, and I'm really excited about this one. I think it's, in a nutshell, I guess you could say it's everything you don't learn on the driving range. So it's all about how to play your best golf.
Well, it's great to hear. A lot of us can actually take a fair few tips out of this, I think, as well, Nick. If you had to pick a couple, though, what are some of those really key lessons or key things that people can do, that just small things that people can do to try and improve their score?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I find is, you know, club selection is a big thing out on the golf course, and you know, people let their egos get in the way. One of my favourite sayings is, you want to hit a 7-iron further, use a 6-iron. Rather than trying to smash a 7-iron, why don't you just take an extra club and hit it easy? The only club that you'd really need to hit a long way is your driver, so you can work on that separately. So there's a really good tip, is to take an extra club when you're out in the golf course and just swing smoothly, because your misses with that one will be a lot better than your misses when you're trying to go flat out. And then something else I think that's a real key part about the book is golf is really all about controlling distance. And if you can be, especially with your short game, if you can have good distance control, you'll get up and down a lot of the time, and you'll rarely three-putt, because most three-putts come from either being too long or short. It's never too wide. So if you focus more on speed when you're putting and controlling your distance, I think that'll really help. And there's a number of tips in the book about that.
How do you go about trying to figure out what your distances are with the clubs that you've got? What's the best way to sort of get that feel?
Oh, for full shots, well, it's a matter of getting on the range and, you know, trying to pick out a target. Maybe it's a 150-metre marker, and hit 10 balls and you go, well, okay, how many am I landing around that 150-metre marker? Because a lot of people, you know, they remember their best shots, but when you average it all out, usually that's probably not close to where your average distance goes with each club. So that's always a good way. If you have access to a TrackMan or you have one of those driving ranges you can go to where there's, it shows you your distance you're hitting every shot, or even on a simulator, that's a good way to do it as well. You can even do it out on the golf course when it's quiet and throw a bunch of balls down and on a par three or something and hit a 7-iron and see how far it goes that way.
I guess a lot of us probably go to the driving range, as you sort of mentioned before, and we just sort of whack away and have a hit and see how straight we can hit them. What's the worst thing that we do when we go to the driving range and that doesn't help us when we actually get to the golf course?
Well, I think one of the biggest things when you are on the range, it's important to, I think, have a part of your session where you're actually trying to achieve a result. Like, one of the biggest things I hear is golfers say, well, I hit the ball quite well on the range, but then when I go on the golf course, I can't seem to play. And a lot of the times, because the driving range is wide open, you can sort of swing freely and you can get into a bit of a nice rhythm in that regard. So put yourself under a bit of pressure on the range. A favourite game of mine, which is in the book, it's called Three in a Row, where you've got to hit one club between two targets three times in a row. So by the time you get to that third shot, you've got a little bit of pressure on yourself, because if you miss, well, then you've got to start again. And then, you know, that's when you can work on your pre-shot routine and work on all those things that you're going to use out on the golf course.
Chatting to Nick O'Hearn, pro golfer who started his career on the PGA Tour of Australasia, went to the European Tour before heading to the US to compete on the PGA Tour for 9 years. So he knows what it's like to craft a career at the top level. Golf in 2022, from a WA perspective, we look in pretty good shape with some of our young players coming through. Female-wise, outstanding. Minji Lee, another top three finish this time at the PGA. Do you keep an eye on the likes of Minji and Hannah Green and those young players coming through, Nick?
Oh, of course, yeah. I especially on Hannah, because she's from my home club in Perth, at Mount Lawley. She's been really playing well, obviously, of late. Had a great start to the season. And Minji Lee, I mean, what a performance where she came. She was actually second, just one shot out of winning a second major in a row, which was just an amazing effort. And her brother's doing quite well too, Minwoo Lee. You know, he's popping up in the majors, had a nice result at the US Open recently. So WA golf's in really good shape.
What about the LIV Tour? It is creating so much controversy, so much discussion. I don't know whether you're jealous that you're not playing in it to make the money, or whether you look on and say, well, I'm glad that's the decision I'm not involved with at the moment.
would be a good choice to have, wouldn't it? But it's really been a fascinating time in golf, and sort of sitting back and seeing how it's all panning out is, who knows where it's going to go. I mean, if you get a crystal ball and you go, in 3 years' time, what's golf going to look like? And I don't think anyone can predict it at the moment, but I think in a roundabout way, even though it's, you know, fracturing the game a little bit at the moment with all this controversy about players going and staying and getting all this money and so on, I think it'll be good for the game in the long run, because the PGA Tour has had a pretty tight rein on professional golf for a long time. And, you know, it's really upset, I guess, a lot of our Australian schedules at times, because a lot of those players that were in the US, I mean, myself included, for a little while there, it was very, very hard to come back here to play in Australia. So they're starting to look at revamping their schedule and sort of finishing it early. So our best players like your Cam Smiths and, you know, Mark Leishmans and all those guys, they're going to be able to come back and play the Aussie events now, which is fantastic for us. So, you know, the Saudi Golf League, as they're calling it, or LIV Golf, I mean, the numbers they're throwing out monetarily, I mean, it's just insane what they're doing. It's very much a controversy. I quite like the team aspect of it. They're just going about it in a very cheesy and awkward way. and if it helps the game of golf in the long run, I don't see it being a bit of an issue. But obviously, you know, there's some issues where the money's coming from and the whole sports washing side of things. So it just depends on which side of the fence you sit on. I'm sort of sitting back and just looking at it all going, well, this is going to get very interesting the next 6 to 12 months, that's for sure.
It certainly is. Do you see the LIV Golf side of things being sustainable into the future? And you kind of touched on it there, the PGA, they're obviously going to have to change things up a little bit themselves. So that might just kick them into gear a little bit.
Yeah, they've sort of, you know, sat back and let things go for quite a while. And their schedule really is too long. And they announced the other day at the Travelers that, you know, they're going to shorten the schedule. They're going to put more money into certain events and create some sort of top 50 events similar to the LIV format, so to speak. So they've already had to make some changes. Whether the LIV Golf is sustainable, well, I mean, it seems as though there's a never-ending, you know, source of money there. So money talks in any sport, in any business. So, you know, they're not in it for a return, which is pretty obvious because there's no way in heck that they're going to get their money back, obviously. So what their end game is, who knows? You know, obviously the main thing that everyone's talking about is the sports washing, but it's funny, you know, once the gun goes off and people start playing golf, well, everyone sort of forgets about that. The only thing I would say is, you know, for all those players that are competing in those events, no cuts, 54 holes, they may lose their desire for the game because they're getting paid all this money and there's no one's really cares who wins and who loses in these events, I don't think. Whereas, you know, when the majors and the big tournaments that we've always come to know and love, like your Australian Opens or the Memorial tournaments in the US, or whether it be the Volvo PGA in Europe, those sort of tournaments have status and you go down in history with those sorts of things. These LIV events, I'm not sure how it's all going to pan out.
Nick, we could talk golf forever with you. You've got such a wealth of knowledge. Didn't even get to mention the fact that you're the only man to have beaten Tiger Woods twice in the World Match Play Championships, but that is nicely tucked away in your memory bank, I'm sure. You've got this new book out. It's called How to Play Your Best Golf, at all good and not so good bookstores, I'm sure. Thank you so much for joining us on this Monday night, and may the book be a roaring success.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Adam. And look forward to chatting again soon.
There it is. Nick O'Hearn joining us. Pro golfer. What a career he forged over so many years. That was for the Toolkit Depot. More on Sports Day coming your way shortly, including the Kia Top 7.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Depot dollars has been extended till Thursday at Toolkit Depot.
Been a huge show, Sports Day on this Monday. Mark Reddings and Adam Papalier with you as we roll into our Kia Top 7, Kia EV6 and Sportage Cars of the Year. Paps?
Skeet, top 7 footy moments from the weekend. A real mixed bag that I'm going to throw at you here, but just some of the things that caught my eye across the weekend. So I'll start with at number 7. I thought it's a very off-Broadway game, but the Power and Suns clash yesterday was super entertaining. And I think for me, just the rise that we've seen of the Gold Coast Suns this year and the fact they're so competitive in matches and have been lately has just been a brilliant thing to see for the competition.
No question about that. Unfortunately, their hoodoo ground, or one of the hoodoo grounds that they have, is the Adelaide Oval, and they just couldn't get across the line yesterday. But it shows you they are a team on the move. Stuart Dew should be keeping his job at the end of this year. And look, they're probably not going to play finals, but I do like the way they're heading. And of course, they get one of the kings back next year. It becomes a different story for the Gold Coast Suns. But finally, there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Number six was actually Glenn Archer's son debuting for the Kangaroos yesterday. Not a lot to love for the Kangaroos this season, but to see Jackson Archer out there, it's just one of those things that I love about footy, is the father-son rule. It goes completely against all of the other equalisation measures that should be in the game, but somehow it stays, and it's just great to see the sort of the legacy go through. And you saw the emotion from Glenn Archer in the social media post last week too. I mean, to see his son, and you know, the shinbone of the century, seeing his son pull on the jumper for the club and then get in a few fights in the first quarter, I thought it was good to see.
It was so Glenn Archer-like, wasn't it? You're right. I think the social media side of families, parents, finding out their son or their daughter is about to make their debut in the AFL or AFLW. It's become a really nice part of footy in this modern era.
Yeah, the father, son and daughter, it'll be the mother-daughter rule at one point as well into the future. But yeah, it's a great thing. Number five for me is just the stars that we've seen play in the Waffle this season. And Nick Natanui going back to play in the Waffle on the weekend rather than coming straight back into the AFL, it just works on so many levels, because they get a hit out at the lower tier, they get some confidence back, they get a feel for the game, and they get extra people through the doors, and they have such an impact on the team that they are there with. I mean, you think about the development of some of the other players that are in that team coming through and what that means for their footy careers, getting to play alongside someone like Nick Natanui, who can just lead from the front, kicks a couple of goals, absolutely dominant. We saw it with Nat Fyfe a couple of weeks ago, Elliot Yeo, Dom Sheed, etc., etc. They've all played in the Waffle this season, and I just think it's been great for the competition.
Absolutely huge, you're right. It's only sparingly we get to see these stars, but it does give the competition a huge boost, no question.
I know the opposition coaches maybe not so ecstatic about it, because it has had a bit of an impact on results. Number four, the Eagles breaking the drought on Friday night. They needed to get a win. The Bombers probably should have won. They had their chances. Peter Wright didn't kick all that accurately despite being so dominant in the first half. But West Coast found a way, and they did it the way that they've probably done it quite a bit, is just relying on that efficiency when they actually get inside 50. But for all of the West Coast Eagles supporters to get a win at home for the first time in 335 days was a pretty big moment from the weekend.
Totally agree. They needed that victory. They might get a few more at the back end of this season.
Richmond and Geelong, the finish of that game. Is there anything better, Skeet, than a game of footy when there's just a kick in it with a couple of minutes to go? It was so good. Jack Henry kicking the goal to put the Cats back in front. Another seesawing contest, tight all day. At the MCG, everybody watching on, I thought it was a cracking game.
It was brilliant. And 35 points or thereabouts up Geelong. They were just about home, but Liam Baker got them back in the game, I thought, very much so in that third quarter, and started to drive the Tigers. They're up by 17 and still got beaten. What an extraordinary game. I think the best game of the season almost.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Now, the footy moments we're talking about, they could be from any code of footy and any league around the country as well. And coming in at number two, would have gone pretty close to number one. I know you've seen it, Skeet, and I hope everybody out there listening has seen it as well. If not, go and check it out. Chris Ryder, who's the cousin of Paddy Ryder, who we know could take a pretty good hang in the AFL, he took one of the great marks I've seen in the Great Northern Footy League on the weekend. An absolute specky. He was sitting on the heads of three or four different people, but the height he got, Skeet, to take the mark and held on to it was just brilliant.
Absolutely superb. And I tell you what, if the footy show was still running on Nine, that'd be almost footy legends.
It would go pretty close to winning it as well. And then number one, I'm going to switch codes, but just having Origin in town for the weekend, it captured a lot of people's imaginations. Massive crowd, almost 60,000 in the building. And hopefully it leads to WA getting a rugby league team here in the future.
Absolutely. A Kia top seven for Australia's most wanted, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage cars of the year. Time to roll into our sports update, thanks to Century 21. Don't sell with any ordinary estate agent. Sell with century21.com.au. Congratulations to Port Adelaide's Lockie Jones. Big result for Port. They got the points against the Gold Coast yesterday, and he is the Rising Star nominee for NAB, 16 disposals and one goal. That is our sports update, thanks to Century 21. And on this day for Bower and O'Day, because the little things are everything, on this day in 2006, Australia lost to Italy 1-0 in the World Cup after Italy scored a penalty in the final seconds of injury time. We felt absolutely robbed. But that is
Dead set dive, Skeet, it was.
I know. All these years later, we haven't forgiven the Italians. But that is on this day for Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Great to have your company on this Monday night. Been a huge show. Up next, it's Todd Johnston and the Night Shift. The 8 o'clock news coming shortly your way. But from Adam and myself, we'll see you at 6 o'clock tomorrow night on Sports Day.